Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson.
Junk food? Well, it's hard to call some foods junk foods, but I mean, junk is what a lot of people say when they talk about candies and sodas and chips and things that we should not be eating that much of, especially when we see that they're showing up, or they may be showing up at respected events such as food nutrition conferences. Well, recently there was a very, very large food and nutrition conference in Boston, and it's sponsored by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and it was criticized in, among other places. An article in Time Magazine was pointing out that companies that otherwise are known for producing some foods that might be considered junk food or sodas were exhibitors there, and they were calling them out and saying that this is compromising these organizations and groups like this, that if they end up having them at the event. Well, my guest today stood up, and she's a respected registered dietitian, and she stood up and said, not so fast, and I'm going to let her explain that. And so I want to welcome Lauren Harris-Pincus. And Lauren, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks, Roger. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, Lauren, you were just at the Food and Nutrition Conference not too long ago. It's a few weeks ago now. And you saw some articles in advance where they were criticizing these large companies that were exhibiting there. Why don't you explain why you took a position of saying, not so fast?
I think I took the position of saying not so fast because headlines are great, but they never tell the whole story. So when I saw the article in Time Magazine prior to arriving at the conference, I was sort of frustrated because I feel like dietitians get beat up a lot in the media when we're the ones with the science degrees that we actually can sift through all of the information that we see at a conference, for example. I can go through that floor, and I'm not going to be taken in by marketing materials. I can actually look at something and say, you know what? This is not a food I would recommend to my clients. Or, you know what? That's something I might not have thought of, but when I look at it, it might actually be a good choice. So I feel like we live in the real world, and if we ignore what is sold in supermarkets and big box stores and Targets and Walmarts and where our clients shop, if we're not exposed to these things, we can't give people good information and good advice. So I don't have an issue with larger food companies that carry many different lines of products, some quote-unquote, you know, unhealthy, some healthier. I don't have a problem with them exhibiting because I feel like knowledge is power and all the information that we can get helps us help other people.
Well, we ought to try to frame what this event is for a lot of people that aren't there. Who comes to this event, the Food and Nutrition Conference?
Right. So we affectionately call it FENCE because the abbreviations are FNCE. It's generally speaking, it's dietitians. It's sponsored by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Upwards of 10,000 dietitians descend on whatever the host city is once a year, usually in October. And it's a place where we go to learn, get a lot of continuing education credits on, you know, the latest science in a whole bunch of different areas of nutrition, as well as learn new business skills and to network with a lot of our colleagues who we would never have the opportunity to see face-to-face during the year. Along with that is an expo floor where a lot of companies come and sponsor. And they have a booth, the same as any other trade show, and they can display whatever they want us to look at. And depending on the company, that's going to vary. And the reason that I wrote the article that I did was because they were picking in particular on PepsiCo, you know, which obviously we think of as a soda company as far as the general public is concerned. But as I wrote in my blog, when I went to the PepsiCo booth, I saw oatmeal, orange juice, and hummus because they also own Quaker, Tropicana, and Sabra. So three things that I use with my clients all the time. and three things that I know a lot of my friends and family and colleagues buy and consume is owned as a parent company by PepsiCo. So by not having PepsiCo sponsor, we don't have access to learn and taste and, you know, exchange conversations with the people who work with that company. So I just feel like that would be a shame to punish smaller brands that we actually like the products because of the ultimate parent company.
Well, I think that would be a real eye-opener to a lot of people. I mean, probably most people, when they think of PepsiCo, think of sugar water, colas, and that, and all these other products that they have healthy products, healthier products than just colas. And I would imagine that that's the case with a broad range of these companies that are there. I know Nestle's, I think, was also mentioned in the article. And I have no idea how many other brands Nestle owns, but they also must be like Pepsi as well, with a number of healthy items as well.
Sure. I mean, Nestle makes bottled water. So I just bought a ton of their adorable little Halloween decorated bottled waters to give out for trick-or-treating instead of candy. And the only reason I did that was because I actually noticed them on display at Fancy, and I had never seen them in my store, so I ordered them online, and now instead of candy, I'm giving out bottled water to thirsty trick-or-treaters. So I think that's a very positive thing for me anyway that came out of the conference. But Nestle, you know, we think of candy and chocolate. They make Libby's pumpkin. So, you know, I don't think anybody's going to complain about a can of pure pumpkin puree when it comes to health value. They also make Lean Cuisine, which over the years has become an incredibly, I don't like to use the word clean because if a food isn't clean, it's implied that it's dirty, which isn't the case, but they've removed additives and preservatives. They've put in whole grains and a lot more vegetables. So it's, Lean Cuisines are really a healthy option for somebody looking for a quick meal or to control their calories at that meal. So there's so many products that just, again, sort of have the guilt by association that you say, oh, Nestle, they make candy. Well, they make a whole lot of other things too, and I feel like as dietitians, we need to know what's available for the general public.
Well, these large companies must want to try to influence people like you. I mean, I assume that the reason that they are at these events is that they want to get information into your hands that you in turn would be advising others and hopefully giving some sort of reinforcement to some of their healthy products.
Sure. I mean, that's the case at any trade show, any company, anywhere, whatever the genre is. You know, of course, if you sell food, you'd like to have dietitians supporting you. You know, even PepsiCo and Nestle, they have dietitians who work with them internally. So I would much rather have a company who's trying to do the right things and have dietitians advising them than not having dietitians advising them. So I feel like if we don't engage with these companies, they'll find other people who will, and perhaps the people without the science background to properly work with them.
Well, let's talk about the background of these of nutritionists and dietitians, and let's break that down a little bit more. So what would be an example of what all of these people do for a living? What is a nutritionist or working, you know, with hospitals or, you know, bloggers or food writers? Could you give us a little bit more of kind of the mix of these influencers that the brands are trying to influence?
Sure. Well, a registered dietitian is what I am, and that's what we're talking about with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Anybody can technically call themselves a nutritionist without a degree or a license. It's one of those general terms that doesn't have a real definition behind it. So RD, that registered dietitian, that's the credential. So in order to have that, you need an undergraduate, at least an undergraduate degree in nutrition. You need to do an internship, a clinically supervised internship. Mine was a full year, like September 1st to September 1st, full-time clinical internship in a hospital I did. And then you have to pass a national board exam in order to be a registered dietitian. So there's a lot of steps. It's a ton of science, chemistry, biochemistry, physiology, biology, microbiology, nutritional biochemistry. It's a ton of science. And, you know, we learn how to understand what is in food. So there's a bunch of people out there who, not to disparage what anybody does, but there are people who are coaches who kind of consider themselves nutritionists, but they didn't have the training we had. A lot of personal trainers consider themselves nutritionists, but they didn't really have extensive nutrition training. So you just have to be careful what the credential is of the person you're looking to for the advice. But RDs work in any number of ways. So I started my career as a clinical dietitian in Manhattan at a major medical center, went on to a private practice from there, and then I started blogging and nutrition communications and media work as well. So, you know, that's a little mishmash of what I do. I do recipe development, and I develop recipes for food companies and other interested parties. I'm writing a cookbook right now. So there's any number of things that you can do as a dietitian. Some of them work with food companies. Some of them work in supermarkets. Some of them work in gyms. There's just so many things that you can do as a registered dietitian.
Well, with the over 10,000 that attended the FINCI event then, they're reaching millions of people, aren't they?
Absolutely, as the influencers, yes.
Well, and I suppose that gets back to the fear of somehow that they are going to be passing on propaganda. And that's probably what the accusation was back of in the Time article, that these companies would come there and possibly try to sell some propaganda of their less healthy products. Have you ever seen that? Has that ever happened to your... just observing the whole dynamic that you've seen companies pitching things that aren't healthy?
I don't know about pitching, but no company has ever come to me to try and get me to share information with the general public that I was uncomfortable sharing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all have to realize that every human body is different and everybody has different nutritional needs. Not everybody needs to lose weight. Some people need to gain weight. Some people have medical conditions where, any calorie is a good calorie for them. Some people need special formulated foods in order to be able to eat because they have medical problems. There's so many different things that you will see at something like FENCI that run the gamut for any kind of medical situation someone might have that an average person might not consider to be healthy, but it might be an option for somebody else. So I just go back to the fact that we are trained and capable of sifting through whatever propaganda, as you say, is presented and finding the science behind it. You're not going to find registered dietitians who, at least I hope not, or I haven't met any, who are going to preach what a company that sells very unhealthy things would want them to say that goes against the better judgment. That's just not in our code of ethics.
Well, of the foods that would be unhealthy, is it safe to say that high sugar content is the leading issue, the leading concern?
I think it's the concern of the moment. It always goes around. It's been trans fat. It's been any fat. It's been, any number of things depending on where the tide roles at the time. I think what we have to realize is that, again, we live in the real world. People like to eat. People like junk food. We like a cupcake every now and then. Everyone might want some candy every now and then. It's going to be Halloween. We're going to have some candy. It's just sort of the way it goes. So I think we have to realize that we do live in the real world. People are going to have treats every now and then, hopefully less often than more often. But it's just part of life. We're going to have cake on a birthday. We're going to send treats in to soccer games. It's just the way we work as a society. So I think just the more aware we are of what there is, the better we are able to help people choose which ones are better or less bad and guide people in their everyday lives.
One of the things that's gotten a lot of attention lately is the idea of buying fresh and local. Does that become part of the conversation, or is there room for processed food products in the healthy diet as well?
Yes and yes. So I think fresh and local is phenomenal. Obviously, if you live in California, you're going to have a lot more fresh and local throughout the year than if you live in the Northeast where I live. If I tried to rely on fresh and local year-round, I think we'd probably starve a good portion of the winter. So there's definitely a place for processed foods, and not all processed foods are bad. Technically speaking, the second you do anything to a food, it's at least partially processed, even by peeling it. So I think, you know, we have to be careful sort of what we classify as processed. I think that there's a big difference between, you know, having some oatmeal that's been cut up a little bit than, you know, spam. Mm-hmm. you know, they're going to be very different. So there's levels of processing, and it also depends on the base ingredients in the product. You know, fresh and local is wonderful for many reasons. From an ecological standpoint, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But we can't all necessarily survive and thrive solely on fresh and local.
You know, one other thing that's come up recently is looking at some of the foods that they've claimed are addictive, that companies have researched what level of fat or sugar or salt that just makes it almost impossible to not eat it and overeat it. Is that an issue that's being, you know, talked about among dietitians, or is it a real issue?
I'm not a food scientist, so I won't pretend to speak with any authority on that particular subject. I will say that just from being a human and a person who eats, I think that when we start in with something like candy or sweets, we like the taste, so we tend to continue to eat them. Same thing with a bowl of chips. You know, when you like the salty taste, you tend to keep going unless you sort of break that cycle with a mint or some gum or something to get the taste off your palate. I'm not so sure how much of it is a sinister thing on behalf of the food companies. I really don't know. I do think, though, that in general, just based on our taste buds, we tend to have an affinity for sweet, and it is something that's hard to stop doing once we're in it. That's a whole nother topic of mindful eating and how we talk to our clients about really trying to savor what you eat and focus on it and not eat while you're distracted, so that you can actually pay attention to, the sensory, the sensory things associated with the food that you're eating, just the taste, the texture, the aroma, all those things, so that you can really enjoy and savor, similar to how we talk about how the French eat, that they eat small portions, but it's an experience when they eat. So that's sort of what we try and get people to do, is really pay attention to their food so that they need to eat less, as opposed to mindlessly eating an enormous bowl of chips in front of the television. So it's just easier to mindlessly eat those snacky, salty, sugary foods.
So again, getting back to the idea of large brands getting information out, wanting to have support of dietitians of what they're doing. One way they do that is, you know, to exhibit at the conference, and you've done a good job of explaining of how you can sort through that, how you can, you know, be able to make decisions as dietitians, and they have healthy products to talk about as well. I suppose there's other ways they try to get the information in the hands of influential people like dietitians, which I suppose they mail information, and I'm sure they have tours and visits to facilities and other events they sponsor as well. Does that caution kind of carry over? I mean, that it just goes with the territory, that you should expect that the large brands are going to try to get as much information in your hands, and whether or not it's at the trade show or send you stuff or invite you to tour their facilities and things like that. Is that something that everybody that's a dietitian should just expect that they're going to be dealing with?
I don't think so. I mean, the truth is, the people who they would reach out to are more of the people who work in the media or who blog publicly or who are active on social media, because they're the ones they notice are talking to a larger number of people on a regular basis. Uh-huh. I mean, believe me, when I worked in the hospital, I never heard from a food company. So, it's not like they're after dietitians, so to speak. I think that they like to get feedback from us as well. It's not only a matter of trying to brainwash us on their own behalf. They want to hear what we think would be helpful? You know, how can we make this product healthier? What would they need to do in order to create a product that we felt comfortable recommending? So it's really a two-way street. You know, if they're going to sell this stuff in our grocery stores and supermarkets where our patients and clients shop, not only do we need to educate the patients and clients, but we need to keep an open line of communication with the food company. So hopefully our visions can align a little bit better.
Do you think that that people like yourself that are dietitians have been successful in getting brands to produce some more healthy alternatives?
I do. I think that if you look at the landscape of what food companies have been offering, a lot of, you know, the trans fat is almost nearly gone. People are lowering sugar content. People are lowering sodium content. People are looking to remove artificial colors and remove artificial additives and preservatives. And that's all really been happening over the last several years, and it's going to continue to happen based on consumer demand, but also health influencers who say, look, you know, this is what we want to see our patients and clients eat. And we wish more of these things were available because we'd be more comfortable recommending them. So, again, I always say, if you don't want to talk to somebody, they'll find someone who will. So I always feel like we're better off as health professionals having one foot in the door so that we can communicate with larger brands so that our goals can align and ultimately the consumer is the one who benefits.
Well, there are also dietitians, I believe, working for supermarket chains now increasingly.
Yes.
And what kind of a role do they play in this communications?
I'm not 100% sure because I'm not one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely am friends with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of different things in the store. So obviously there are certain products that they're going to recommend to the shoppers that they feel are better products, that are healthier products. I mean, there may be some things as far as the supermarket with sponsored, you know, food demos, perhaps. I'm really not totally mm-hmm. sure what goes on there in their role. But they're a really important liaison for the consumer because they can go to a dietitian in their, you know, place of purchasing their food and say, hey, can you help me find a healthier version of this? Or is this okay for my family? Or I have high cholesterol. Am I okay to eat this? Or I have diabetes. How much sugar, you know, what's my limit? And dietitians can help shoppers with that, whereas they might not have access to a person to guide them. So it's really fantastic to have dietitians in a supermarket. And hopefully that makes brands even more conscious to try and create healthier products because they know there's a person that's a point of contact in that supermarket.
Well, Lauren, you sound optimistic. You know, when I think about these last 15 minutes or so that we've been talking about, I think that you seem to really come forward with a lot of positive energy, I think, about the fact that there are better products coming out and more choices and good constructive communications taking place.
Well, I try to be positive because I feel like there's two ways to look at something. You can complain about it or you can be part of the solution. And I like to think of myself as part of the solution, and I try to never look at things as one-sided and because they generally aren't in life. And I try and find the middle ground and say, okay, generally speaking, I would never see myself working for a company like PepsiCo or Coca-Cola, but if there's a brand that they own that I believe in, I don't think that I would say, hey, you know, I'm not going to help you because the company that owns you makes soda. I don't think that's fair. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, whenever I do work with a food company, and I do have a disclosure page on my website that clearly states anyone that I have any contacts with, because we have to, as dietitians, follow certain rules about disclosure and blogging. So there's nobody that I would work for that's a secret. It's all out there. But, you know, I only work with companies who I really believe in who they are and what they do. And I would hope that most dietitians would do the same. But, again, I feel like our voice is going to be a helpful voice inside any company, because we're going to be we're science-based people. You know, we don't ignore science. So we're always going to lean towards what the evidence is versus what people might anecdotally think something is.
Well, now, Lauren, if you were going to give advice to these companies now, I mean, if they were, you had a chance to speak to these large brands, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that they have incredible power to help create positive change in the health of our country by creating more products that are just better for the human body, and really to work with anyone who knows better, particularly dietitians, but even to work with consumers to try and find that happy medium and just make things healthier. You know, we are a processed food society. We're a convenience food society. We just are. And we can't ignore that. So, you know, we talk about fresh and local and whole foods and home cooking, and that's all great and wonderful, and I wish everybody did that, but we can't, and we're not going to. So we have to find a way to help everybody be the healthiest that they can be with what we have available to us. Well, so then the more companies can join in, the better off we all are.
And while they're getting that message from you, what do you tell consumers?
Depends on the consumer.
Sure. But in general, any advice, consumers are going to be buying these products. I suppose when I was fishing a little bit as far as what they're consuming and look at the labels and that sort of thing. Is there?
Flip the wrist. Turn it over. Take a look at what you're eating. Look at the ingredients. Look and see if it's whole grains. Look and see how much added sugar is in there. You know, try and look for wholesome ingredients that don't have a lot of chemicals. Take a look at the protein, take a look at the sugar, at the fiber. You know, generally speaking, the foods that you want to eat the most of don't have labels. So, you know, fruits, vegetables, lean meats, you know, fish, eggs, well, they have labels, but, you know, things that are more of a whole food in origin. And then, you know, obviously we're going to fill in with some processed food here and there. But, you know, just try and keep it as close to nature as possible, the way it was grown, and go from there and fill in the gaps. But the truth is, just knowledge is power. The more we know, the more we're capable of reading a label, the more we understand ingredients. That's where pushback happens, because companies aren't so quick to change their formulations and spend money unless there's pushback from consumers.
Well, this has been a great conversation. And then finally, Lauren, if people want to find your blog or your website, more information, how do they find you?
Sure. So my website is nutritionstarringyou.com, two R's in starring. So nutritionstarringyou.com. And that's where my blog and all of my recipes are and my contact information. You can also follow me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest. It's at Lauren Pincus, R-D, L-A-U-R-E-N-P-I-N-C-U-S, R-D. So that's the handle you'll find me under most often. And, you know, I look forward to communicating with anybody who wants to share.
Well, Lauren Heron Pincus, thank you very much for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you, Roger. It's been a pleasure. I'm so glad we had the opportunity to talk.
Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk. Join us again on Facebook or farmtotabletalk.com, where you can follow us on SoundCloud, or go to iTunes, where you can subscribe to receive regular podcasts. And while you're there, please give us a review and a rating on iTunes. Thanks again for listening to Farm to Table Talk.